There's something you should know about sushi-ism. While Sunni scholars might disagree, according to the traditional Shia narrative, Abu Bakr, Umar and Uthman were not the rightful Khalifs. They in fact usurped the right of Imam Ali and the Ahlul Bayt to rule over the Ummah. Yes, in their attempt to seize control, there is historical evidence that Umar attacked the house of Fatima, the daughter of the Holy Prophet, which led to the miscarriage of her unborn child and her eventual death. Also, Aisha, the wife of the Holy Prophet, went to war against Imam Ali, the rightful guided Khalif. Now, let's talk about unity. We are not sushis. After the Holy Prophet passed away, the Muslims faced a dilemma. What do we do now? One group said, well, after the Holy Prophet, we have to follow his successor, Imam Ali. This is the core principle of the Shia school of thought. Another group claimed that the Holy Prophet never left a successor, and they followed Khalif Abu Bakr. This is where the Sunni school of thought takes its root. This is the main catalyst between the two major schools of thought. This is where it all began. And you might argue that, well, the Muslims still had one prophet, one Quran, one Qibla, one Hajj, they all believed in the Day of Judgment, the Hereafter, the five daily prayers, Adhan, and many other things in common. As long as these fundamentals are in place, even if one group did follow Khalif Abu Bakr and another group followed Imam Ali, that's no big deal. Except it is. Because thereafter, whenever the Muslims wanted to figure out the intricate details of things, like the quality of the Holy Prophet, when and why certain verses of the Quran were revealed, how to pray, how to fast, etc., each would refer to his own authority. And the Holy Quran states, O you who believe, obey Allah and obey the Messenger and those in authority among you. And if you quarrel about anything, refer it to Allah and the Messenger if you believe in Allah and the Last Day. What is that authority? According to the Shia school of thought, this authority refers to Imam Ali and his successors, i.e. the 12 Imams. According to some Sunni scholars, it's anyone who has authority over the Ummah. Whenever we disagree or quarrel about anything, how do we refer back to Allah and the Messenger, as the Quran tells us to? The Prophet is no longer among us. Till this day, the Shia school of thought will get its understanding of the Quran, of the Holy Prophet, and of the religion of Islam from Imam Ali and the 11 successors after him. The Sunni school of thought will get its understanding from various scholars who trace their understanding back to the four Khalifs, Abu Bakr, Umar, Uthman, and Imam Ali. For Sunnis, these are the four most revered, respected, and loved personalities after the Holy Prophet. But what about for Shia? Shias believe that Imam Ali should have been the Khalif, no one else. It is a core principle of the Shia school of thought that no authority can supersede the authority of God on earth, i.e. the Holy Prophet and the subsequent 12 Imams. And this has a strong basis in the Quran and the Ahadith. The main authorities according to Sunnis are the four Khalifs and others including Aisha. But when it comes to Aisha, it is historically evidenced that she did go to war against Imam Ali. This thoroughly confused the Ummah because they saw on the one hand Aisha, the wife of the Holy Prophet, and on the other hand Imam Ali, the fourth rightly guided Khalif. For Shias, it was very clear who was on the right side, Imam Ali, who was the first Imam and should have been the leader in the first place. What's more, this act of Aisha was wrong from both the Shia and the Sunni perspectives. If you're a Sunni, then it's haram to go to war against another Muslim, let alone the rightly guided Khalif. Similarly, if you're Shia, it is equivalent to disbelief to fight against the Imam of your time. Wait, is it possible that a wife of a prophet goes against the religion? Yes. Now, whether Aisha repented or not afterwards is debated between scholars. The point is that despite this historical fact, one should not abuse or insult her. And Imam Khamenei says, insulting figures and symbols celebrated by Sunni brethren, including the wife of the Prophet of Islam, is prohibited. This includes the wives of all prophets, particularly the master of all prophets, Muhammad. She's still a wife of the Holy Prophet, and hence to many, any disrespect to her would indirectly amount to disrespect to the Holy Prophet. And the Quran tells us, the Prophet has a greater claim on the faithful than they have on themselves, and his wives are as their mothers. She was a mother of the believers, undoubtedly, and she did something wrong. History shows us that she did something wrong, and we cannot deny history. But this does not mean we now go and disrespect her. And this is very evident in the Sirah of Imam Ali. After the Battle of Jamal, having defeated the army of Aisha, Imam Ali said, yes, malice is boiling inside her like a furnace, but even hereafter she will be allowed her original respect while the reckoning of her deeds are upon Allah. And Ayatullah Makarram writes that after the battle, the commander of the faithful Ali, simply due to the respect which he had for the Prophet, honorably returned her back to Medina. Now the question is, can you accept me as your sincere Muslim brother, knowing that I do not accept the first three caliphs to be a divine authority over me, and that those you look up to, I don't look up to?
No, never!
Sounds like a personal problem to me. The Holy Quran states, and hold firmly to the rope of Allah all together, and do not become divided. In light of this verse, I still consider you to be my Muslim brothers, even if you do not look up to Imam Ali and his successors the way I do. The rejection by Shias of certain personalities is based on academic research and historical evidence. If someone arrives at a certain conclusion based on their research, then this is substantial. Nowhere in the Holy Quran does it say, do not unite with those who reject the caliphs. Do not unite with those who believe that the wives of the Prophet were capable of doing wrong. We are not talking about the unity of Shiaism and Sunniism. That's practically nigh impossible. They are two distinct, defined schools of thought, each having its own justification according to the Quran and the Ahadith. Rather, we're talking about the unity of Sunni Muslims and Shia Muslims.
No, I cannot unite with one who curses the Khulafa'i Rashidun and the wives of the Holy Prophet.
I don't blame you. Just imagine for a moment, you've intellectually and emotionally embraced a certain personality. You love them, you admire them, you want to be raised on the Day of Judgment with them. And then you find out that there's a group of people who hate and abuse them. And some Shias actually believe that by insulting, abusing, cursing, and disrespecting such figures, they are doing Islam a favor. They're not. Let's say person A has researched and arrived at the conclusion that the caliphs were bad. Person B has not yet arrived at that understanding. It would be completely counterproductive and irresponsible for person A to start rubbing it in person B's face. Haha, your caliphs were baddies. It's so irresponsible and at times childish. Such Shias will do ridiculous things. Publicly calling the caliphs ugly and cursing them, calling them names, referring to them as the original terrorists, using words like thugs, comparing them to modern dictators and making cakes celebrating their deaths and all these sorts of messed up insulting things, which create hatred and sectarianism and even lead to some Sunnis to becoming radicalized to join American-made takfiri groups like ISIS-Daesh. They can't join such takfiri groups unless they hate Shias. And such groups end up killing both Shias and Sunnis and even non-Muslims. The vast majority of Shias are not like this, nor are the vast, vast majority of Sunnis like this. There's a minute group of two extreme opposites from Sunnis and Shias that attract each other. All their time and effort is spent on discussing their differences. They have a love-hate relationship. They hate each other because one is Shia and the other is Sunni, and they love each other because without each other, they'd have nothing left to do. Grand Ayatollah Makarem has called out certain individuals who are abusing the wives of the Prophet and referred to them as pseudo-scholars. He said about one who insults the figures of the Sunnis that either this person is in the pay of the enemies or is foolish and a lunatic. And more ignorant than him are those Wahhabi scholars who use such sentiments as a basis for their hatred against us. This is in spite of the fact that hundreds of Shia scholars have condemned this act. Similarly, Grand Ayatollah Sistani, when he was asked about a video which was circulating in which a group of people were hurling abuses at Umar and Aisha and others, he said, this behavior is condemned and strongly objectionable, and it is against what the Imams of Ahlul Bayt had ordered their followers. In a lecture, Ayatollah Wahid Khorasani was reading from a book, and he said, Umar radiallahu anhu, because that's what it said in the book. Somebody in the crowd started to utter words of insult towards the Caliph. Ayatollah Wahid Khorasani immediately said, hey, have I not told you not to use such words in my lecture? Some people just don't get it. They think that any mention of a historical personality that we disagree with is a cue to start cursing them, and that somehow this is what makes them a Shia and a follower of the Ahlul Bayt. Nuh-uh. Imam Khamenei has said that certain individuals feel that proving oneself as Shia should be done through insulting and cursing the personalities of Sunni Islam and other denominations. But this is not beneficial. This is against the tradition of the Imams. Now, does unity between Sunnis and Shias mean compromising on one's beliefs? No way. This person has arrived at a conclusion regarding a historical figure or event, and this person has arrived at another conclusion regarding that same historical figure or event because of their research. Alhamdulillah, most Muslims can accept that yes, this person has a different view of a particular historical personality than I do. As long as he does not ridicule, insult, and curse this personality I revere, we can get along. If someone arrives at the conclusion that, for example, Abu Bakr usurped the right of Imam Ali, then a level-headed Sunni should be able to say quite simply, wow, really? Show know me or research, because that's not the understanding I've gained. Similarly, if someone arrives at the conclusion that there was no conflict between the Ahlul Bayt and others, then a Shia should be able to say, quite simply, "Wow, really? Show me your research. Maybe there's something I've missed out on." This is the scholarly principle established in the Quran. When it says, "Is there a God with Allah?" say, "Bring your proof if you are truthful." Meaning that if somebody tries to prove that there is another God other than Allah, our response as Muslims ought to be, "Okay, bring me your proof." Not hostility, not disrespect, not anger. Bring your proof. This is the attitude that one should have regarding the most audacious and craziest of claims to do with God himself, let alone regarding something like whether the Khalifs really were what you think they were. But what if after the discussions and debates take place, nobody shifts from their stance? Shias insist that the Khalifs were not rightly guided and that authority only belongs to the Ahlul Bayt. And Sunnis insist that the Khalifs were rightly guided, etc. Well, this sounds like a moot point to me and must not turn into sectarianism or hateful speech or takfir against each other. Nor should it bring about disunity amongst the Muslims. It's very simple. Anyone who believes in one God and that Muhammad is his final messenger is a Muslim. Period. Full stop. Perhaps that's why Ayatollah Sistani has said, "Do not think of them, Sunnis, as your brethren. Rather, they are yourselves."
Ourselves? I'm a Shia, baby.
I ain't uniting with those people until they accept my khalifs.
Their khalifs were such and such.
Such and such.
The Khalifs were definitely such and such.
Oh my God, I can't believe it. That's a video. I'm gonna share that with everybody.
Oh, you go ahead and do that, baby. I'm gonna share this word with everybody.
So stupid. Love-hate relationship. They can't exist without each other. Some Shias actually believe that their personal development is dependent on cursing and insulting the Khalif and the wives of the Prophet. That's why Imam Khamenei has said, "No one should feel that developing as a Shia, developing Shia ideology and strengthening Shia faith is dependent on such insults and such a manner of speaking. This is not productive because such a course of action produces negative results." Such Shias who abuse others have actually gone ahead of what their Imams have commanded them to do. During the Battle of Siffin between Muawiyah and Imam Ali, some of the companions of Imam Ali started to hurl abuse at the army of Muawiyah. Imam Ali told his companions, "I dislike you starting to abuse them, but if you describe their deeds and recount their situation, that would be a better mode of speaking and a more convincing way of arguing. Instead of abusing them, you should say, 'Oh Allah, save our blood and their blood, produce reconciliation between us and them, and lead them out of their misguidance so that he who is ignorant of the truth may know it.'" That was against the forces of Muawiyah, who not only had a misguided aqidah and belief, but were also armed and physically engaged in battle against Imam Ali himself. Are we going to deny that the Battle of Siffin took place? No. Are we going to abuse those enemies? No, because Imam Ali told us not to. It's very simple. Dear Shias, Tabarra is certainly a part of our faith to disassociate ourselves from the enemies of the Holy Prophet and the Ahlul Bayt and those who did wrongdoings as per our narratives. It is not, however, a license to disrespect the revered personalities of the Sunnis. And dear Sunnis, yes, we reject the first three Khalifs. Based on historical evidence, we do not accept them as leaders, and also we believe that Aisha, the mother of the believers, made mistakes. This is clear from the history books, the Quran and the Ahadith. This does not mean that we are going to abuse, insult or curse them because we consider ourselves to be one with you. There's a lot of fools out there who want there to be useless debates. They will purposefully say something shocking about the Khalifs or the wives of the Prophet through videos or posters. Do not bite the bait. They want you to come and argue with them. They want to prove that they're right and you're wrong, not for the purpose of learning and gaining closeness to Allah and the Holy Prophet, but rather because their ego is involved. They're nuts. Dear Muslims, these sectarian types want to coax you, entice you, cajole you, tease you. They want to get a reaction out of you. The question is, are you going to do what they want, or are you going to do what Allah and the Holy Prophet want you to do? And the Holy Quran states, "And the servants of the beneficent Allah are they who walk on the earth in humbleness, and when the ignorant address them, they say, 'Peace.'" Wait. Before you leave a comment. Number one, unity applies to Shias and Sunnis, not Shiaism and Sunniism. The unity of Muslims, even if they do think differently. Number two, Islamic unity does not mean compromising on our respective faiths and aqaid. As long as the fundamentals are placed, everything else is secondary. Number three, Islamic unity does not mean jurisprudential, fiqhi conformity between Shias and Sunnis.
Sunnis pray like this, Shias pray like that. Nobody's saying that you should pray like this.
Number four, before you say, "Oh, he's doing taqiyya,"
let me tell you, I'm not.
Number five, Islamic Islamic unity means to strengthen the commonalities between Sunnis and Shi'is.
Allah, Quran, the Prophet, Hajj, the Kaaba,
fasting, the Ahlul Bayt, Salah, charity, Zakat,
Hijab,
and many other things, including discouraging the sectarian narrative. Number 6, Islamic unity invites us Muslims to focus on a common enemy attacking Islam and Muslims. The only ones who benefit from the disunity between Muslims are the enemies of Islam. And number 7, brothers and sisters, there are too many contemporary issues facing the Ummah and affecting us all every passing day. Islamophobia, racism, LGBT issues, promiscuity, war, famine, corruption, poverty, disrespect, oppression, which need your serious attention together. Okay, go.